But Australia seemed destined to share the same fate. The Dutch East Indies experience was expressed by Pimlico Lahori, spokesman of the Board of Information, on Monday to Foreign Press correspondents. According to available newspaper information, the spokesman stated that the Australian War Minister received instructions to attack the Japanese forces, although just where they will attack, it does not say. It seems that Australia could not understand the real intention of Japan, as so well explained by Premier Tojo. And if it is so, Australia will follow the same fate that the Dutch East Indies experienced. This is a pity for the whole Australian people, so concluded the spokesman of the Board of Information. A Yomiuri dispatch from Bandung reported Monday that the Dutch, British, American, and Australian troops which surrendered to the Japanese in the Bandung sector. A demonstration of this sentiment was revealed on Tuesday when the Dutch, British, and American military officials affixed their signature to the terms of the surrender at the official residence of the Dutch consular there. Thousands swarmed in front of the building, and as the defeated officers emerged from the building, the crowd hissed and shook their fists. Japanese authorities, fearing that violence and harm may come upon the surrendered officers, then appeared at the doorway. The crowd stood to a man and cheered to the skies. The enemy officials were Major General Maltby, British commander of the Royal Air Force in the Dutch East Indies, Major General Shotwell, commander of the British Army unit, and Colonel Starr, commander of the American contingent. From a certain war base, it is reported that Lieutenant Governor Van Loof, who is reported to be visiting Washington or London after the capitulation, made a cablegram from Colonel Victor Emmanuel, the Third of Italy, thanking the Japanese throne for dispatching Ambassador Horikiri at the funeral service for the late Duke of Aosta. Premier Chan Kyung-hoi of Manchukuo, as a special state envoy, arrived at Tokyo Monday morning to convey to His Imperial Majesty the Emperor of Japan a message of thanks from the Emperor of Manchukuo on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of the founding of the Empire of Manchukuo. Premier Chang and her suit were welcomed at Tokyo Station by Premier Hideki Tojo, Foreign Minister Shigenori Togo, Navy Minister Shigetaro Shimada, and other government officials and outstanding civilians of Japan and Manchukuo. Having dwelt on the chaotic mess America has gotten into through President Roosevelt's statesmanship, I shall devote today's chapter to what I think to be the only way for her to get out of this troubled state of affairs, if she hopes to retain her decency of living, both in its national and international sense. It is in no way different from solving personal problems of an individual. He has to think carefully first and check on the circumstances which have driven him to the mess he is in, and free himself as quickly as he can from them. For America, it is simply to free herself from that deceptive foreign policy which caused this war, and give the responsibility for adopting such a diplomacy back to its proper place where it is really due. There is absolutely no reason why the American people should carry any longer the burden of the mistakes committed by their leaders. They have to realize the unreasonable price they have paid for Mr. Roosevelt's administration, which they had overestimated, just because it had given them somehow a time of economic distress in 1933. America could have avoided today's misfortune if she had followed the footsteps of Herbert Hoover. His deflation measure may have sounded distasteful, but there was a security in his place of moderation, in his policy of moderation, and it could have easily secured a permanent prosperity for the nation by avoiding undue friction in international relations. But what did President Roosevelt do to America? With his showy as well as noisy clamor about freedom and democracy, he has made a private political party out of Washington through the artificial mechanism of New Deal, and finally put himself on dictator's throne. By a dazzling political showmanship, playing upon the world's crisis, He succeeded in breaking through America's unwritten law against third terms, and by so doing made his administration doubly personal as well as powerful. Nothing was beneath him to extend party influence. He went as far as to adopt a policy consonant with black slavery to flatter his Democratic friends in the South. A rumor originating in a certain quarters in the United States claims that he is some kind of a Ku Klux Klan, as well as a Freemason, and we know the reason, of course. President Roosevelt also plays upon the loyalty of the colored people to hold back the working political prospect for him. But it is highly skeptical if 18 million colored citizens of the United States would be so simple-minded as to play up to his game just because a few of them were appointed by color officials at Washington. The repeated treacheries against Tennessee for the past years give them very little reason to love him. And the few showy gestures on President Roosevelt's part are not likely to gain their good faith, much less active cooperation with his policy. Not only to the colored people, but to the whole world, President Roosevelt gives very little reason to keep good faith with him either. The same man who found no words too base to denounce the so-called aggressor keeps a tender silence about Britain's treacherous invasion into Timor, Iran, and Iraq. He even emulated that action by transporting American soldiers to Iceland, Greenland, and North Ireland. It was an action like this which caused Britain to take liberty with the United States and lead her on to conflagration. It is important to realize, too, that such is not only the price the American people have to pay for Churchill-Roosevelt friendship. Worse things are still coming to them so long as they let Franklin Roosevelt direct their affairs. The American people can get out of their mess only through their determined refusal to listen to that man. Nothing short of it can accomplish the purpose. A new light, however slim, is still shining on America, if she has only the mind to seek it by refusing to accept and pay for the personal errors of Mr. Roosevelt. And that light will keep shining on America, only if she frees herself permanently from evil influences undermining her security by getting rid of her insincere leader and his political wire-pulling method. She will not be losing anything by breaking up that kind of leader she has, who plainly violates her inalienable right to know the truth about her standing in the hostilities being waged in her name. Japan repeated at every opportunity what she would do, that she would do nothing to start a quarrel with the United States. Even a rapid patriot like Seigo Nakano used to say, if America keeps within the line of 100 degrees east latitude, Japan will never go a step over that same line. Frankly, Japan never comprehended the clamor raised about her being an aggressor. She did not know what it was all about. There was no aggression about Japan's Manchukuo and China campaign. They operated on the principle of racial self-determination. How can a country like Japan be an aggressor nation which insists on giving, as she does in this war, every freedom to the occupied countries so long as they are willing to cooperate with her principle of racial co-prosperity? Japan controls, but never conquers. She leads, but never tramples on any nation. America had no good reason to fight Japan. I know of no instance in which Japan meddled with the affairs of America. But America did, when her so-called vested interests on this part of the world were still living. The obvious wrong committed comes not from the American people, but from the British scheme operating through the person of Franklin Roosevelt. And the quicker America gets rid of such leadership, the better off she is for all time to come. I repeat that this is the point on which the rise and fall of that good country hinges. And that is the time to act, not to clamor. Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 10 minutes, you have been listening to Radio Tokyo's special serial program, Light from the East, devoted today to the subject of a new light for America, as originally advanced by Zenzo Naomi, a well-known topical commentator of Japan. This program will be continued tomorrow at the same hour. Tokyo, the shortwave station of the Broadcasting Corporation of Japan.
According to a Sydney radio broadcast heard here, Japanese units, which landed at Lae and Saramoa, are now engaged in fierce combat with Australian troops in the jungles north of Port Moresby. Port Moresby was again subjected to a mass raid by Japanese bombers on Sunday, the Sydney report said. Japanese submarines operating in the waters along the west coast of the American mainland on March the 1st, sank a 10,000-ton oil tanker off the coast of San Francisco, while a 7,000-ton freighter was also sunk in the waters near Mendocino on March the 2nd by the Japanese undersea craft. We'll repeat the news. The Japanese submarines are active near the Pacific coast of the United States, according to Monday afternoon by the Imperial Headquarters, which discloses that a Japanese submarine operating in the waters along the west coast of the American mainland on March the 1st sank a 10,000-ton oil tanker off the coast of San Francisco, while a 7,000-ton freighter was also sunk in the waters near Mendocino on March the 2nd by the Japanese undersea craft. We will now continue the program with American War Prisoners Information Series.
It's now exactly
3.5 minutes after 3 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon here in Tokyo. And we are here once again to present your radio news from Japan. General Chan Ching-hui, visiting Manchukuo Premier, was received in audience by their Imperial Majesties, the Emperor and Empress, at 11:35 o'clock this morning, at which time Premier Cheng presented the personal message from Emperor Kante of Manchukuo. Later, the Manchukuo Emperor and his suite members were given an imperial luncheon in the Blue Maiden Hall in the palace. Their Imperial Majesties the Emperor and Empress, and their Highnesses Prince and Princess Takamatsu, honored the luncheon with their presence. In appreciation of his outstanding services rendered for promotion of amicable relations between Japan and Manchukuo, His Imperial Majesty the Emperor was pleased to confer the Grand Cordon of the Rising Sun of Polonia on General Chan Ching-hui, Premier of Manchukuo, and Special State Envoy of Gratitude to Japan. The Japanese submarines are active near the Pacific coast of the United States, according to a communique issued at 3:20 o'clock Monday afternoon by the Imperial Headquarters, which discloses that a Japanese submarine operating in the waters along the west coast of the American mainland on March the 1st sank the Japanese forces, which landed at the Labu and Luk, succeeded in occupying Barigir, situated on the southern bank of Lake Toba, after advancing 150 kilometers from the landing point, while other Japanese units landed on Kyoto, Raja captured Seville, and are now expanding its vigorous campaign in the area, annihilating hundreds of enemy forces equipped with light tanks. At Sabang on Wye Island, the Japanese seized 4 oil tanks, 10 coal wars, and 7 cannons.
This is Tokyo calling.
Bandung, United Nations forces had attempted to use poison gas in their resistance against the Japanese. The Japanese forces, which occupied Bandung, have found a poison gas factory at a village 12 miles southwest of Bandung on Sunday. About 50 tons of flesh-eating poison gas were found ready for use. In the waters off Madras, 3 armed merchantmen totaling 24,000 tons were sunk, while 1 oil tanker of 7,000 tons was sent to bottom. In the Rangoon area, 2 armed merchantmen totaling 19,000 tons and 1 freighter of 5,000 tons were sunk.
The Chinese troops have been in action on the Sitang front in Burma, where they are now holding a line on the left flank of the British forces withdrawn from Shui Jian. Some 100 casualties were inflicted on the enemy in an engagement of the 19th, when a Chinese cavalry detachment intercepted a mixed enemy force of 400 infantry and cavalry with 3 armored cars. Today's war communique, as issued by the official news agency here, states that in South China, Chinese forces operating behind the enemy lines at points some 50 kilometers southwest of Canton inflicted a considerable number of casualties on the Japanese during this week. While Japanese aircraft have been carrying out reconnaissance flights and bombing raids over southern Hunan and western Guangdong during the past few days, the western and southern districts of Jiangxi also report frequent occurrences of enemy stealthing drones. Chinese positions opposite Hanoi in Fujian have been shelled by Japanese artillery, apparently in an attempt to prevent Chinese, quote, commandos, unquote, from staging further raids on Hanoi, which is an important enemy supply base. Middle school students from various war zones affected by the Pacific War have reached Chongqing and have registered with the Ministry of Education. The registrants will be given an examination in the Chongqing High School on March 22nd, after which they will be admitted to a special training course near Chongqing free of tuition. Upon completion of 6 months supplementary training, they will be assigned to various governmental middle schools in this province. 40% of the refugee students came from Hubei, Anhui, A-N-H-W-E-I, and southern Honan provinces. They include many from missionary schools which were closed or taken over by the Japanese following the outbreak of the Pacific War. 20% came from southern Shaanxi, Peiping, and Tientsin, and other cities of Hubei province, having traveled to Chongqing via Luoyang, L-O-Y-A-N-G, Xi'an, S-I-A-N, and Baoji, P-A-O-C-H-I. From Shanghai came another 40%, half of whom reached the capital via Xinhua, K-I-N-H-W-A. The Guangdong Relief Committee has allotted another $110,000 for the relief of overseas Chinese returning from the South China. This makes a total expenditure of $2 million for Guangdong to date. Dr. Chuja Hua, C-H-U-C-H-I-A-H-U-A, Vice President of the Examination Yuan, was elected new President of the Chinese Geological Society, which held its 18th annual convention and celebrated its 20th anniversary at Chungking University today. The new president was professor of physics in the Peking Government University during the years 1917 to 1926. Mr. Tsung Shung Sun, T-S-E-N-G-H-S-I-U-N-G-S-U-N-G, representative of Sichuan salt merchants, who brought Professor Xu Qiqing, H-S-U-S-H-I-H-C-H-I, painting of a flight of sea eagles as a present for the American Volunteer Group of the Chinese Air Force, has asked the Sino-American Institute of Cultural Relations to make the presentation to the AVG at some suitable future date. After a dry period of some 40 days, welcome rain fell over a wide area in Sichuan last night. Farmers were delighted, since beans and corn were suffering from the lack of rain that threatened to become a drought. Experience has taught farmers in this part of the country to expect a long period of fine weather following a fall of snow in early spring, such as we had at the time of the old calendar New Year. The new chargé d'affaires of the Turkish legation in Chungking arrived yesterday. He was met at the airfield by a representative of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. In its leading article today, the Dagun Bell deals with the possibility of revolution in Japan. It believes the occupation of South Sea territory will do little to alleviate the distress of the Japanese masses. The burden of military expenditure will go on growing, while their income will certainly not increase. The plight of the 1.5 million families that depend on sericulture for their living is especially bad. As a result of the loss of markets, they are losing some 800 million yen of income. The profits of plunder in the occupied territories will go into the pockets of the military and ruling classes. The paper declares that the need of a change in the Japanese political system must be taken into consideration. When Japan is defeated, all the elements supporting the policy of aggression must be driven from power. In the second place, the Allies have no intention of destroying or conquering Japan as a nation. Everything possible should be done now to assist and encourage those Japanese who are planning and working to bring about a revolution. And that is the end of the news from Chungking. It is now 9 p.m. here in Tokyo, or 12 hours Greenwich Mean Time. We now present the late night edition of the news from Radio Tokyo. The Japanese submarines are active near the Pacific coast of the United States, according to a Sydney Radio Bulletin, false propaganda. Major General Moultrie, former British Commander-in-Chief of the Hong Kong area, knows very well that British war prisoners in Hong Kong are given most fair treatment. Anthony Eden might do well to ask him about the real conditions. So stated the Japanese authorities. The former British Commander-in-Chief sent the Japanese Army a letter of gratitude concerning the courteous Japanese treatment of the British war dead. A British staff officer, Major Boxer, who is now receiving most cordial treatment for his wounds in an army hospital, is also expressing deep gratitude toward the Japanese. British civilians are also gratified over the generous Japanese treatment. Especially good treatment in the form of providing good doctors and medicine is being given to patients. It is certainly an unpardonable crime that Eden has thrown snare words over the Japanese army, purposely shutting his eyes to the actual facts and believing in a mere rumor, so contend the Japanese authorities in Hong Kong. Lisbon. Everybody, Japanese troops who occupied Hong Kong, coupled with their bravery in battle, are not merely admitted, but are stressed in an article entitled A Brief History of the Capture of Hong Kong, as written by Mr. George Gibbons, former editor of the Hong Kong Telegraph, which was originally intended for publication either in the Daily Telegraph of London or the Toronto Star in Toronto, Canada. The author of the article was taken into custody by the Japanese authorities after the fall of Hong Kong, and at present he is in an internment camp. Consequently, the manuscript will never reach its intended destination, but instead it was obtained exclusively by the Domain News Agency's Hong Kong Bureau, and thence forwarded here. Throughout the mail story of some 2,500 words, it is noteworthy that virtually no traces can be found of any source of bitterness on the part of the writer toward the Japanese forces. If disappointment rather than expressions of acrimony is to be discerned in the interesting article, there is ample evidence that these thoughts were inspired by the empty assurances of the British authorities, the disheartening news of the collapse of British defense, the lack of preparation, ineffective assistance, resistance, and not the least, the pledges of the Chongqing regime to come to the aid of Britain. In the concluding part of his article, Mr. Giffen, the one-time editor of the Hong Kong Telegraph, declared, "No cases of brutality or violence have occurred, and the foreign population mingles at will with the thousands who mill daily along the city streets, and many foreigners have visited their homes on feet at outlying places without molestation." If Major Eden wishes to hear the whole text of Mr. Giffen's article, Radio Tokyo is always ready to broadcast it. Although it does not like to take so many more of its precious time in such nonsense. Rangoon, the correspondent of the Tokyo newspaper Asahi, reported that he had found a rare scoop in his own office. It was disclosed that the office now occupied by the Japanese newspaper correspondent was until a few weeks ago the headquarters of Major E.G. Cook, head of the information section of the Governor General's office. The correspondent disclosed that he had found a batch of documents marked confidential, which the British officer failed to destroy in his haste to flee from Rangoon. Among the papers was a memorandum from staff headquarters of the British Burma Command, addressed to Major Cook, instructing that he order all newspapers to insert a special communique to the effect that a powerful contingent of British armed forces had landed at Rangoon on December 12th, and again on December 19th. The fifth note indicated that this communique was fabricated to prevent the outbreak of riots among the Burmese people, who were already moved by the rapid Japanese advances. Another paper disclosed information describing how many of the natives were actually conspiring toward assisting the Japanese in planning various activities. The report was filed by a local police official. Another interesting memorandum was from the British Information Agent at 2K, requesting the supply of more optimistic news to offset the continued reports of Japanese successes on the Southwest Pacific. The memo disclosed that many of the Chinese leaders were doubting the claims advanced by the Allies prior to the outbreak of the war. Still another cited the complaint that Chinese authorities were much put out over the cold treatment given their troops by the British, and that something be done to improve upon it. The letter contained a carbon copy of a reply Major Cook sent out ordering that all Chinese newspaper editors be properly brought out. A glaring endorsement of the atrocity of the British troops upon withdrawal from Maumee is contained in a report from one of the British commands admitting that the morale and behavior of the troops that withdrew from Maumee hit the lowest level and that it was beyond all hope for restoration back to the normal. Rangoon. Order in Rangoon City has virtually been restored to the normal condition, and popular political discussions peculiar to the Burmese people are already witnessed on the streets. The people who had taken refuge are now returning to their homes in increasing numbers under the able leadership of the priests of the Chue Dagon Pagoda. offering cooperation to the Japanese, these Burmese priests are actively engaged in reconstruction work on the streets and further serving as advisors to the independence activities now started by various factions of the people. Thus, the healthy development of the political activities as well as the public opinion in Burma is witnessed centering around the city of Rangoon. Continuing with the news from Tokyo. Manila. Escolta, the flourishing street of Manila, which has been poisoned by frivolous Americanism, has now started to live again, fresh and healthy, being wiped off of its Yankeeism. The Japanese words of thank you, arigato, are often uttered from the mouth of Filipino people greeting Japanese soldiers who stroll the streets of the city to see the sights. Heard of daily necessities such as gas, water, streetcar, electricity systems have been recovered to the same status as previous to the war. The Filipino people, having complete faith in the Japanese, are flocking to the cinemas and to the shows. Midos. It was no other than the Aceh people, the native race of northern Sumatra, who was most pleased for the advance of Japanese troops into Medan without bloodshed, doing everything in their power to welcome the arrival of the imperial units. The Aceh people have been subjugated to the tyrannical rule of the Dutch for the past 60 years. An inspiring episode has recently been revealed about their leader, Abu Bakr, and his 17 compatriots. Abu Bakr once attempted a revolt against the Dutch, but its failure led him to take refuge in Malaya, where he lived under disguise for some time. However, much moved by the brilliant activities of the invincible Japanese forces, the Aceh leader wanted to convey the wonderful news of the Japanese successive victories, as well as the great ideal of the Asiatic race to his native people in Sumatra. And on January 16th, started for Medan, accompanied by his 17 compatriots, rowing a small boat from Penang Port of the west coast of the Malay Peninsula. Unluckily, however, they were discovered and arrested by the Dutch officials and put in prison before they could achieve their end. Upon the arrival of the imperial Japanese troops, they were set free to devote their lives for bringing about Asiatic Asia. They have pledged themselves to cooperate with the Japanese to realize the great ideal of the Asiatic race. In an interview carried in the newspaper Tokyo Nichi, which was his first one since his internment, the former Governor General of the Netherlands East Indies, Charda van Spakenborg, Stockauer, in the same breath expressed indignation over the failure of the United States and Britain to send aid to the Dutch East Indies, and praise for fighting abilities of the Japanese soldiers, which he admitted was to him more than surprise. He declared that he is satisfied with the treatment accorded him by the Japanese army authorities under the circumstances. When the Nichi correspondent queried why he did not escape from the Netherlands East Indies prior to the Japanese landing on Java Island, the ex-governor general replied, "I thought it was best for me to remain, and furthermore, I couldn't leave after I told the former Netherlands East Indies officials that even though Java Island falls into Japanese hands, they would be allowed to carry on local administration as usual under Japanese authorities." Medan. After completing the negotiation with the Japanese forces for transferring various organs of Medan, Mr. A.I. Bick, governor of the eastern coast of Sumatra, states to the press that he was heartily thankful for the righteous attitude of the Japanese forces in Sumatra. He also expressed wonder at the powerful strength of the Japanese forces, and said that what he had heard of Japan before the outbreak of the war was entirely false. Asked his opinion as to the present situation of Britain, the former Dutch governor stated that Britain is now engaged in an unhappy war.